Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Vaccination appointments are abundant and commerce is opening up more. For months, immunity and access are what we'd all been longing for. But are we mentally and emotionally ready to jump into a post-pandemic life? How do we prepare? Our guest today has been thinking a lot about that and hearing about it from her patients, too. We're revisiting our conversation from April with Dr. Michelle Pierce, a professor in the graduate school at the University of Maryland, Baltimore, where she directs graduate certificate programs in integrative health and wellness and science communication. Pierce is also a clinical psychologist who researches the relationship between spirituality, coping, and health, as well as the integration of spirituality into the practice of psychotherapy. She's written two books. One is Cognitive Behavioral Therapy for Christians with Depression, a practical tool-based primer. The other, published last September, is called Night Bloomers, 12 Principles for Thriving in Adversity. It offers keys about how to transform loss and grief into personal growth. We'll talk about it more in a few minutes. Pierce wrote a commentary in the Baltimore Sun about reintegration after the pandemic. I asked what prompted her to write it.
You know, it was actually my own personal experience. I got the vaccination and I thought that all my dreams of going back and being social that I've thought about for the last year, that I'd suddenly be very excited about being out. And I realized I had the opposite reaction. I was really nervous and I didn't find myself accepting the invitations I was getting. And then I started talking to my clients and some of my colleagues, and I wasn't alone. There were a lot of us that were feeling really uncomfortable about reintegrating.
Well, talk about the fear of others that you refer to in your column.
Yeah, so for the last year, we've spent the whole time feeling afraid of other people, that other people are actually the dangerous thing. And that was helpful for us because of how COVID is transmitted. And so this helped to keep us safe. But we learned this threat that other people are actually a threat to our lives. And that isn't something that we just shift out of immediately once we get our vaccination.
Well, why is it so hard to unlearn a survival response like that?
It's a great question. It's because of the way our brain is wired. So our brain is wired that we want to remember things that are dangerous and things that are negative because our survival depends on it. We want to learn one time that that moving car is dangerous to walk in front of, or that hot stove is dangerous to touch. We only want to do that one time and never do it again. And so our brain encodes that so that we will remember it. And that's what happened here with COVID. We learned people are dangerous and we only had to learn that one time. I mean, it was reinforced many, many times over the last year. So we really got it in our heads that people are dangerous.
What are you hearing from patients about post-pandemic stress?
I'm hearing the same things that I was dealing with myself. You know, is it really safe to be social? Or, you know, I'm missing my work colleagues and suddenly work is saying I can come back to work and now I'm dreading it. Or I've been really bored this last year. There's been so little to do. But now that life is going to come back online again, I actually feel really anxious about that happening. So I'm hearing a lot of conflicted feelings and then confusion about having those conflicted feelings. I thought I wanted this. Now we're going to have it. And I'm feeling anxious about that.
Can something as severe as living through a pandemic change someone's personality permanently?
I don't know that it would change a personality permanently, but we know that trauma can change things about us. And I don't know if it would say necessarily our personality at its core. But things like being anxious or being hypervigilant or being hyper alert or being sad or just feeling a lack of purpose in life, those things can take a while to resolve.
That's University of Maryland, Baltimore professor and clinical psychologist Michelle Pierce. On the record on WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about life-saving behaviors we acquired during the pandemic and why they stay with us. So, how do we begin to ease our way back into having a social life if we went bad?
Yeah, and I think there are several things that we can do. The first thing I would suggest, we need to go at our own pace. You know, everyone's going to have a different pace to reintegrate. And this will be different from your friends, your coworkers, even your family members. And just to know that that's okay. One of the things that we need when we're feeling anxious is a sense of control over our lives. So to the extent that we can, we want to determine what is that pace that I want to reintegrate. Now, I acknowledge we can probably do this more in our social lives, pace ourselves. That may be a little more difficult at work. We may simply get an email like I did this morning, hey, you're going back to work June 1st, and have a little less say about that. But still, I would recommend that people have a conversation with their supervisor, with their manager, about creative ways they might be able to pace themselves back in slowly.
What are some of the creative ways that present themselves to you?
You know, things like, can I work from home part-time like I have been? Maybe if I'm back in the office, could I still virtually connect to large group meetings so I'm not in a conference room with everybody else? Things like that.
So you're talking about being selective or trying to be selective in how you reconnect.
Yes, well, that is another tip, being selective. You know, there's going to be things that we didn't do for the last year that we might not want to do going forward, even when it's safe to do so. And I'm really encouraging my clients to think about their lives and what they want to pick up again and what they don't. A lot of them said, you know, I realized just how busy and chaotic my life was before COVID, and I don't want to go back to that. And so that's good. That's good. We've learned something about ourselves. And so we want to be selective in what we choose to pick up again.
How does one try these ideas on? Like, what's going to work?
Well, one of the things we can do is use our imaginations. And this is a technique that we use in therapy called imaginal exposure. And we use that to help people who have phobias. So let's say you're afraid of snakes or spiders. We wouldn't immediately put you in a situation with a real snake or a spider. We'd actually start with having you imagining yourself in that sort of situation. And so I'm encouraging clients and others to really think about, you know, if there's activities, situations that you're feeling anxious about doing post-COVID, we can start by imagining ourselves doing those first before we actually go out and do them. And what we're really doing with imagination, we're preparing our mind with this feeling state that we want before we're actually venturing into the physical environment.
It sounds like a lot of trial and error that some of us are going to go through finding our way.
I think you're right. And I think we're going to have to be very patient. This is the up and down process. You know, some days we're going to feel more comfortable than others. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Why we're going to have good days and bad days. And we just need to be patient with ourselves. You know, our brains are really quick to learn threats, but we're slow to unlearn them. So we got to give ourselves some time and give ourselves a break as we're going through this process.
Isolation during the pandemic was not as difficult for everyone. I mean, reports say that introverts and those with social anxiety actually fared better during isolation. What do you suggest for those people for reintegration?
I mean, I would suggest a lot of the same tools, especially the pacing and being patient with yourselves. You're right. Those are a group of people that had an easier time with social distancing. So having more social contact is going to be more challenging for them. So I would suggest that they do that as slowly as possible so that they can work up their comfort level. That would be my suggestion.
How should we deal with ourselves if we're in turmoil about this?
I think we need to keep naming it and normalizing it. I mean, I'm so thankful, Sheila, you're having a show on this because we need to talk about it. And the more that I put out my experience out to the world, the more people, you know, emailed me, contacted me and said, wow, like I was feeling the same thing. I didn't have words for it. I couldn't understand it. And so I think we need to get this conversation going. Like, this is normal. We've been living in fear for a year and we're not just going to suddenly snap out of it. So we need to normalize it for each other.
I want to get back to your very first point about pace, because you said, you know, you may not have the choice in your business life or your professional life, but maybe more so socially. But I can imagine a lot of friends kind of pushing. Wait, you know what? We're not going to have lunch? We always had lunch. Why aren't you ready for lunch?
Yes. And so we're going to have some peer pressure around that. But I think we're going to have to speak up for ourselves and say, you know, honestly where we're at. Some people understand it, some won't. I mean, I acknowledge that many of us, like myself, had the luxury of staying home during the pandemic. And although that had its own challenges with loneliness, there were others that didn't have that luxury of staying home. And so they're going to feel very differently. They won't have the same readjustment period that those of us who had to stay home did. Or as you mentioned, introverts versus extroverts. Some of our extroverted friends might not understand why this feels so overwhelming for us. One of the things I've heard, not just anxiety, but overstimulation. So I've had people say to me, you know, I went to the mall for the first time in a year and I can only stay for 15 minutes. You know, I went in one store, two stores, and I was so overwhelmed by all the stimulation, the lights, the people, the noises that I had to leave. And I think we're going to find that a number of us are going to feel overstimulated, which again is another reason why we're going to have to pace ourselves.
Clinical psychologist Michelle Pierce is a professor in the graduate school at the University of Maryland, Baltimore. We've been talking about how to go about reintegrating into social life as pandemic restrictions ease. We have a link to her commentary about it in the Baltimore Sun at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Quick break now on the record, and then we'll ask her about the steps to transform loss and grief into personal growth that she outlines in her recent book called Night Bloomers. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about post-pandemic anxiety and how to deal with it. Michelle Pierce is our guest. She is a clinical psychologist and professor in the graduate school at the University of Maryland, Baltimore. Now we're going to talk about her recently published book, Night Bloomers, 12 Principles for Thriving in Adversity. The book begins with a very personal story. As a clinical psychologist, that was a bold move.
It was a bold move. And I have to tell you, Sheila, I felt vulnerable after the book came out for probably a good 4 months. You're right. As a clinical psychologist, I'm used to asking all the questions and hearing someone else's story. So it was a real change to put my story out there.
You want to give us a précis of that story?
I do. So in 2013, my husband announced that he didn't love me anymore and he was leaving. And it shattered my world. I didn't see it coming. And it was sort of my greatest fear realized. And something really fascinating happened about a week after that announcement. I got a text message from a friend, and it was this beautiful, vibrant pink flower. And the text message said, "I've night blooming cactus. I've cared for this cactus for years, and it finally bloomed last night." Huh. And I have to tell you, those two sentences, that pink flower, they changed everything. I mean, my first thought was, like, there's flowers that bloom in the dark? And then my next thought was, wow, like, that means there are flowers that require the dark to bloom. And then my next thought was, you know what? I think there are people that require the dark to bloom too. And I'm one of them. I'm a night bloomer. And so this whole idea of blooming in the dark and being a night bloomer was really born out of that moment.
Okay, so trace that a little bit further for us. Blooming in the dark means dealing with adversity?
It means becoming more than. So the idea that, you know, when we go through suffering and trouble, I really think we have three things that could happen to us. One thing is that we could be destroyed by it. Two, we could be unchanged by it. Or three, we could be positively transformed, not in spite of it, but because of that very adversity. And so blooming in the dark really corresponds to the psychological concept of post-traumatic growth. And that is we can experience positive changes in our lives as a result of struggling with these really challenging, difficult events. And so that's the perspective I wanted to put out there for people, is that we don't just have to be destroyed by an event or just bounce back to where we were, which is resilience. We can actually become more than because of that very adversity.
You devote a big part of this book to explaining why the act of writing is so critical to growth after loss or trauma. Talk about why.
Yeah, writing is a really powerful tool for transformation. There's more than 30 years of empirical research on this, showing that those, when we will write about the most difficult things we go through, we'll actually end up with better mental health and physical health. So there's something about getting all of this emotion, all these thoughts out of our heads and onto the page that really helps us to create a narrative, to create meaning, to get insight, to learn lessons. That's very healing for us.
Okay, I'm a word person. I suspect you're a word person. But what if someone doesn't believe they're a writer?
You know, you don't have to be a writer. In fact, when I lead these workshops, I say to people, this isn't going to make you a better writer. You know, you're not going to learn English better. Your spelling doesn't matter. Your grammar doesn't matter. This really is a different kind of writing. It's writing for wellness. It's not writing to become a better writer.
That's University of Maryland, Baltimore professor and clinical psychologist Michelle Pierce. On the record on WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about her latest book, Night Bloomers, 12 Principles for Thriving in Adversity. The book offers 12 steps to work through personal adversity. Talk about a few of them.
Sure. And maybe just to a preliminary thought before that is that we've been taught that time heals all wounds. And that's actually wrong. And the research has shown that that's wrong. The truth is that meaning heals our wounds. So we need to be able to make meaning or make sense of what just happened to us. And I think that's why this message of Night Bloomers is so important for us right now. We've just spent a year going through this collective trauma and we're starting to come out of it. And this is really our chance to sit back and like make sense and make some meaning out of this. Because when we're able to make meaning, we set ourselves up for better mental and physical health. So sure, let me explain a couple of those principles or tools that I have in the book that help us to make meaning and to bloom in the dark. So the first one is to set an intention to bloom. And this is really creating a vision for yourself and for your life of who do I want to be? You know, if I were to bloom in the dark, if I were to become more than as a result of, for instance, going through this pandemic, what would that look like? So I really encourage people to ask, instead of saying, you know, why did this happen to me? You know, instead ask, well, what now? And who do I want to become? And the reason this is so powerful is because our expectations create new pathways in our brains. They create new behaviors and new feelings. And this really helps to set us up for transformation.
So that's one of the steps. What else?
Yes. The next one, which is really important, and I would say this is a really challenging one for myself included, but it's grieving before growing. And this is where we have to acknowledge, what did we lose? You know, how hard this past year was, how we're feeling, and really giving ourselves the time to grieve and to honor what just happened to us. So we're feeling the emotions, we're talking about them, we're journaling about them, maybe we're going to therapy and discussing them. But the goal here is that we're feeling our feelings so that they don't make a home in us. So before we grow and transform and bloom in the dark, we really need to grieve first.
How do you know when you've done enough of that?
Well, I don't think it's a linear process, to be honest with you. I list 12 principles of blooming in the dark in the book, and I tell the reader, you're not going to go through them sequentially. It's not like one, oh, now I'm on step 6 and now I'm on 7. You're probably going to loop through them. And over time, the grief becomes less intense. You know, you can imagine waves coming into the shore and the waves aren't quite as high and powerful and as often, but you're still going to have grief over a long period of time. It's just not going to be as intense.
I know we can't delve into everything that's in the book, but one of your steps is called mining the mess. Talk about that step.
This is an important one. And I think we're just at a prime position right now to really engage in this mining the mess. And so I use this term because I believe there are gems that we can only find in the dark. And so I tell my clients, you know, once you go through something really difficult, a mess, an adversity, mine that adversity for the gems. So ask yourself questions like, what did I learn about myself? You know, what's most important to me? What do I want to continue to be part of my life? Or what do I want to let go of? I'm also encouraging us to do this collectively. You know, as a nation, what have we learned about ourselves in the last year? And then growth is actually not just accumulating this self-knowledge. It's nice to know things about ourselves, but growth is using and applying what we know. So when we mind the mess, we learn things about ourselves individually, collectively, and then we can put those things into practice. And that putting into practice is where the transformation comes.
The examples of trauma and loss in your book are very personal, but as you mentioned, we've all experienced in a sort of collective way, a communal way, living through the pandemic this past year. And that goes beyond personal loss. So how does communal trauma and other kinds of communal trauma work with the principles in your book?
I mean, one of the principles is to support your bloom. I say, don't go through the dark by yourself. You know, blooming is a collective process, and we really need to be supporting one another. And yes, this is unique. I mean, I think as a psychologist, usually when I'm helping people, they're coming in with an issue and I'm not inside their issue. So I've got some distance from it. I've got some emotional fortitude that maybe they don't have in that moment. And I'm finding as a psychologist and, you know, many healthcare workers that we're in the middle of this mess together. And so that's been a really humbling and an eye-opening experience of just being able to be real with ourselves as healthcare providers of where we're really at and leaning on one another. I don't mean I'm leaning on my clients, but having to reach out for support from your social network where we're just collectively, I'd say, holding each other up through this past year. And that in itself can be very healing, knowing that there's something we can be doing for other people while we're suffering ourselves.
What do you hope people come away with from reading and doing the work in Night Bloomers?
What I really hope they realize is that there's another perspective available, that they don't just have to have lost a year of their lives. That yes, the loss and the grief and the hardship, it was real. I mean, this past year was one of the worst years of my life, just like most of us can say. But I really want to give the reader and today the listener the hope that it's not just that we can move through pain and crisis, but we can also be positively transformed by it. And so understanding that there is this possibility of blooming in the dark. And by the way, post-traumatic growth or blooming in the dark, that's more common once you go through trauma than is post-traumatic stress disorder. So just to plant that seed of hope in people that there are potentially really positive outcomes that we can have even after and because of a very difficult year.
What a wonderful thought. Thank you for talking to us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Michelle Pierce, a clinical psychologist, is a professor in the graduate school at the University of Maryland, Baltimore. We spoke in mid-April about her book, Night Bloomers, 12 Principles for Thriving in Adversity. We have a link to more information about it at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cass, so glad you're with us on the record on WYPR. Come back tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks!